with him. It wasn't really necessary for her to accompany him, but she was concerned about his condition, and a little guilty about the way Ellis had treated him. She said, "How did that go?" "I thought it was interesting," he said.
"In what way?"
"Well, the discussion was entirely medical. I would have expected a more philosophical approach."
"We're just practical people," she said lightly, "dealing with a practical problem."
Benson smiled. "So was Newton," he said. "What's more practical than the problem of why an apple falls to the ground?"
"Do you really see philosophical implications in all this?"
Benson nodded. "Yes," he said. "And so do you. You're just pretending that you don't." She stopped then and stood in the corridor watching as Benson was wheeled down to the elevator. Benson, Morris, and the cop waited in the corridor for the next car. Morris pushed the button repeatedly in that impatient, aggressive way of his. Then the elevator arrived and they got on. Benson waved one last time, and the doors closed. She went back to the amphitheater.
"Has been under development for 10 years, Ellis was saying. "It was first started for cardiac pacemakers, where changing batteries requires minor surgery every year or so. That's an annoyance to surgeon and patient. The atomic power pack is totally reliable and has a long lifespan. If Mr. Benson is still alive, we might have to change packs around 1990, but not before then."
Janet Ross slipped back into the room just as another question was asked.
"How will you determine which of the 40 electrodes will prevent a seizure?"
"We will implant them all," Ellis said, "and wire up the computer. But we will not lock in any electrodes for 24 hours. One day after surgery, we'll stimulate each of the electrodes by radio and determine which electrodes work best. Then we will lock those in by remote control."
High up in the amphitheater, a familiar voice coughed and said,
"These technical details are interesting, but they seem to me to elude the point."
Ross looked up and saw Manon speaking. Manon was nearly 75, an emeritus professor of psychiatry, who rarely came to the hospital anymore. When he did, he was usually regarded as a cranky old man, far past his prime, out of touch with modern thinking.
"It seems to me," Manon continued, "that the patient is psychotic."
"That's putting it a little strongly," Ellis said.
"Perhaps," Manon said. "But at the very least, he has a severe personality disorder. All this confusion about men and machines is worrisome."
"The personality disorder is part of his disease," Ellis said. "In a recent review, Harley and co-workers at Yale reported that 50% of ADL sufferers had an accompanying personality disorder, which was independent of seizure activity per se."
"Quite so,"
Manon said, in a voice that had the slightest edge of impatience to it.
"It is part of his disease."